to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And next segment, well, guess what's going to matter? Vinyl. Quinn Bishop, Cactus Music, 2110 Portsmouth. We've been talking vinyl on the show. Last week we had Sig Lagoon's Tomas Escalante on. Now we're going to talk vinyl. I mean, these guys are so knowledgeable. It's off the charts. So I heard in commercial break from Nick Sciarra, Quinn Bishop, who we're going to bring on from Cactus Music here, is going, well, how am I going to follow up that interview with Pablo Mastroianni? And I told Nick, I said, well, just tell him you know more about vinyl than Pablo, probably. And I can almost assure you that. Quinn joins us now. Quinn, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Hey, wasn't that an amazing interview with Pablo Mastroianni? The whole story to him getting on the field in the World Cup, unbelievable.
It's so great, and I'll tell you what is even greater than that is hearing the things that the wheels are getting in motion and things are starting to happen over there. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're looking forward to seeing the Dynamo and Dash players getting back out there slowly. All right, so let's just first start here. I brought you back with Flock of Seagulls, and I want to show off your incredible knowledge of music. Give us some background on Flock of Seagulls.
I guess kind of legendary new wave band, kind of the classic, made it big with the first record, and then it's diminishing returns with each record after that until it's kind of done. Probably known as much for their haircuts as the music, right?
Yeah, they definitely did have that look with that hair, and I've been trying to find their greatest hits. It's a hard vinyl to find.
Yeah, you know, it's that's kind of the CD era, right? Like the vinyl was maybe only 15% of the market at that point, so you're trying to chase something that is outnumbered by CDs exponentially.
Talking to Quinn Bishop, Cactus Music, 2110 Portsmouth. By the way, they're still open, and we'll give you information about how you can get some of your best music when you want it. So how much of the music industry now, just to give my listeners an idea, Quinn, how much of it is taken up by the resurgence of vinyl?
Well, at least at our store level, it's over 50%. It's 50 and change. But, it's the only format to show exponential growth. There's still a lot of CDs being sold. With regards to streaming versus CDs, there's still the CDs still conquer the streaming with regards to sound quality. There's just fewer places to buy them, so that kind of squashes the numbers. But, you know, for me, vinyl is such a touchstone. It's how I got acquainted to music as a young person, and I never really felt like I went through the cassette era and the CD era, and I never really felt like I had the music unless I had it on an LP.
Yeah, so the rawness of vinyl, I was talking to Tomas, who you know, on the last show, and just the rawness of vinyl, holding it in your hand, the sleeve, the record you bring out, it can bring back a memory, unless it's some new stuff, which I buy new stuff as well. Just take us into that a little bit and how that brings people back.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I heard this analogy years ago, which I think is true. You know, if you think about it in terms of beverages, listening to a download or even a CD, it's like opening a can of soda pop, but putting a record on, taking it out of the sleeve, putting it on the turntable, putting the needle in the groove, there's a ritual to it. It's like making tea.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it, actually, because, you know, you put the coffee pot on in the morning, you put that needle, you might hear a couple little scratches, and the next thing you know, you're going somewhere else. Loving this. We're talking to Quinn Bishop, Cactus Music. Quickly, and we're not done with this interview by any means, but just remind people how they can come get vinyl for you. Can they call in and you guys pull it? How does it work right now?
Yeah, right now we've decided, even though there's been the lifting of the restrictions for retail to open, I think with every business it's kind of a personal decision. With regards to us, our core staff, we all care for people that are high risk, so it just really wasn't an option for us yet. We want to see where it goes, and we'll certainly reinstate shopping in the store once things are a bit brighter. But right now, we're doing retail to-go curb service where you can call us. We have an email, cactus curb service at gmail.com, and you can email us with questions or stock you're looking for. It's always good to have options. Most stores, most retail stores, have not been getting shipments over the last month or 6 weeks, so that's a little trickier. But there's that option. We also have a Shopify store where you can buy our T-shirts, which are amazingly popular. We've got 15 different designs, and Discogs, which is a sales platform we use to sell all of our collectibles, where you can find test pressings, exceedingly rare stuff on there, and you can get to it all by going to cactusmusictx.com. There's a link tree, and you can just pick how you want to shop from there. But we would, you know, love to see people at the door and love to talk to them on the phone. I'm there personally helping people find what they're looking for daily. One of the funnest things I've done is I've offered to do a personal shopping spree for people where they list they just give me a dollar amount, a genre, several points of reference of what they like in a format, and I'll go round up some of my favorite stuff for them. They're rolling the dice a little bit, but I think it's worth it.
Oh, no. That's not rolling the dice. This man knows his music, rest assured. I mean, I've asked you questions, and you've pulled some great things. By the way, the Blue Nile hats, I'm trying to find that one, too. That one's, I guess, in the same kind of time period as Flock of Seagulls. That was a pretty cool album. All right, if I came to your house right now, what would be in and around your turntable these days? What are you listening to, Quinn?
Ooh, well, I just listened to, over the last day or so, I listened to the Bloomfield Cooper Stills, the Super Session record, a little bit of Warren Zevon, Loudon Wainwright, my old friend Ian McLaughlin of The Faces, one of his records. And, yeah. You know, Van Morrison.
Played with Ronnie Wood, right?
At our house. Yeah, played with Ronnie Wood a lot. And I don't think he could keep up with the Stones and the extracurricular activities. So he had to jump off that ship.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think a few bailed on that one, too. Yeah, right? I mean, didn't Mick Taylor bail on that one, too?
Yeah, I think there's a long list of what Keith would call the roll call of shame of people that couldn't keep up with him that had to get out of there.
Yeah, so your passion for music, I mean, you're a musician. Where did it come from? I'm going to expect to hear something like a father or a relative, but where did your passion for music come from? Because that's the first thing I ask people in the game when they come on this show for interviews, you know, where did the passion come from? Where did the fire get lit?
Well, you know, it's so funny. Ever since I was very young, like 5, 6, 7 years old, I just always took a, always noticed what music was playing, always kind of deconstructed the songs in my head and was a record buyer at a really young age. And my parents were a big part of that. My father was a Creedence Stones guy, and my mom was an Everly Brothers Beatles fan. So, I mean, that's just responsible parenting in the music department. So I got a good start.
You had cool parents, that's for sure. Man, I mean, you had your mom covering the nice Beatles and the nice Everly Brothers, and then you had, you know, the Stones on the other side.
Yeah, for sure. Stuff. And I think my dad thought that they sold out after they abandoned the blues stuff. He really liked those early records, so I those are endearing to me as well.
Yeah, no question. CactusMusicTX.com. He's Quinn Bishop. It's 2010 Portsmouth. They're still doing business over there. It's an amazing place. You've had, you know, all kinds of acts come in there. Explain a little bit how you bring the live act in there and how that works, and because that was really a dynamic, interesting thing you did with your music store. Obviously, you have the space for it, but, man, that's just like bringing it to the people. Very, very cool.
Yeah, you know, well, artist contracts are written very much like author deals for books, to where they have to do personal appearances. They generally don't really care to do them. So you have to create a comfortable atmosphere where people, where the artist is going to look good, sound good, and be in a place of comfort where they're happy to meet people up close. And, you know, we've got many, you know, this is going to be our 45th year, and we've always done that. Even going back to the origins of the store, which was the record ranch, which was owned by the Daley brothers, it was on 11th Street here in the Heights. Back in the day, the guys that were on the Louisiana Hayride, like Hank Snow and Hank Williams and probably a lot of other Hanks, they would come to the store that day and meet people to promote their gigs that night. We kind of do the same thing, but it's usually tied to a new album coming out, and probably much like getting guests on the show, yeah. You ask a lot of people, and sometimes people say yes, you know, but I'm sure they're tripping over themselves to get to you, but for us, it can be a little more difficult.
Yeah, I don't know if they're tripping over themselves, but I mean, I think we built up a good reputation over the years. People like to come on, and we enjoy the conversation, and the stories and the platforms for others is what's important with this radio show. Okay, so some of the new remastered vinyl that comes out, it's really thick, it's really heavy. Take me through that in comparison to getting some of the original thinner vinyl and to the elitist or to the real serious collector. How do you distinguish between the two? Is one a no-no?
I think it's different in every case. You know, there are records that you would want an original pressing because they sound great. And then in some cases, the music was never really overvalued by the content holder or the label or the distributor. So, you know, you get to the point now where some of the technology is so amazing. It can bring so much out in the sessions, especially if it's a damaged tape or something, that in a lot of cases, the new remastered vinyl is really the definitive version. But then I would say more often than not, you're better with your best conditioned older pieces. And I'll tell you right now, you know, we had this story that broke last year, which documented the largest intellectual property loss, you know, in history. And it's that Universal fire 13 years ago where Universal lost all of their masters that were stored on the West Coast in the United States. And that includes Tom Petty, Lynyrd Skynyrd, all of the chess masters, Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry. You know, they're burned.
You mean from the Chess
gone.
Brothers in Chicago?
The
chess label. Wow. Yeah. That's just lost history, right? I don't know. Did we lose Quinn?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, there we are. We got you back.
Okay.
Yeah, you were talking about that.
Yeah, so if you're looking to buy a Tom Petty record, I would, in much as I would hate to tell you not to buy a brand new record from me, I would urge you to seek out original pressings from the 70s and 80s because they're going to sound better than the new one.
All right. When you had all those in-house shows at Cactus Music, give me one that really stood out to you as for maybe being a little bit outrageous or wild or just performance-wise you saw something you thought you might not see. Was there any that really jumps out?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and we've caught a lot of people on the way up. You know, we had, you know, Janelle Monáe and, you know, back in the day, the Ramones, Police, Prince, all meet people and sign autographs at the store. But one of the more recent ones for me that I just thought was unbelievable, we did an event with Rodney Crowell, who's the Houston kid. He's from here. And it was to promote a book, and he was supposed to perform three songs from the book and then read from the book. And I think he's just one of those guys that likes to fly by the seat of his pants. And he got there, and he said, you know, I just think I'm going to do something different. And he got up there, and he did a whole set of songs by Houston songwriters. So it was Lightnin' Hopkins, and Man Slipscomb, legendary blues guys, Guy Clark, Willie Nelson, Towns. He did like an 8-song set of these songs that were all, if the artist was originally from Houston and the songwriter was originally from Houston, they at least were attributed to our city. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Man, that's a special day. How about ZZ Top? Those guys come in much?
They used to quite a bit. I don't know that
Billy
they're
Gibbons?
In town that much, but we would see Dusty a lot, and Billy would come in from time to time. Haven't seen him in a while, but I don't know that they're in Houston all that much.
Yeah. Quinn Bishop, Cactus Music. It's cactusmusictx.com. Now, you can go in there. You can talk to him once they get opened again, and I'm telling you, man, you have so much knowledge about music. It's scary. It's scary. You're welcome on this show anytime. And, of course, we want to support our local vinyl store. So Quinn Bishop, Cactus Music, 2110 Portsmouth. Thank you. And I will continue to try to make a living and spend all my money in your store.
Well, Glenn, thanks so much for having me. It's always a treat to get to talk to you. And we'll keep listening.
You got it. Thank you, Quinn.
Thank
all
you.
Right, Quinn Bishop. CactusMusicTX.com. It's right over there by 59 on Portsmouth. I mean, there's things on the wall there. It's like going into a museum as well. Great interview there with him. Thanks for that. And when we come back, we're going to talk to another legend. This is a legend who started off in Major League Soccer in 96. He is the play-by-play man for the Los Angeles Galaxy. Joe Tutino will join us coming up next on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. That was a nice break there with Cactus Music's Quinn Bishop. Some memorable stuff has gone on in that store. That is a great place to support if you are into vinyl. We've had some great interviews tonight. We're going to keep taking it up a big level here because right now we got a guy that's a big part of Major League Soccer since 1996. MLSsoccer.com just did an article featuring originals. Joe Tutino is the play-by-play man for the LA Galaxy. Great guy. Have known him all these years since 96, and we welcome him to the show right now. Joe, thank you so much for coming on.
Ah, Glenn, my pleasure. How you guys doing?
I think we're doing okay down here in Houston, and I guess that's going to be my first question to you is, have you been handling sort of the whole change with the COVID-19 and the issues of isolation and staying quarantined?
I think we're all coping the best as possible. We're a little stir crazy. I have an elderly mom that I pay attention to on a daily basis, and so there's a lot of sunny dudes going on right now. But it's okay. You know, we got her in a bubble at home at her house, and she's safe, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, so you're basically really limiting any outside contact with your mother, I would assume.
Absolutely. No stores, no nothing like that. If anything, it's in-car travel just to get her out of the house and keep her from being stir crazy, but that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. I got 90-year-old plus parents and only two caretakers allowed in and out of the house, so you know the routine, but we're here to talk about you. So I want to talk about you. You know, this is a remarkable lens that you have looked at the Los Angeles Galaxy and Major League Soccer through. I just want to kind of get into initially, when did the call of the game become important to you?
Oh, gosh. For me, it was really out of high school. I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, and coming from an immigrant family, You work, you do something after high school. And for me, it just kind of, you know, there was a pressure building up. I was the youngest of three boys. They're doing something. My brothers are doing something. I had to figure it out. Soccer wasn't going to be an opportunity for me to play. And so I went the journalism route. And then I wasn't getting the answers I wanted in terms of going print, and decided, you know what, I'm just going to be a sportscaster. And I went down that route. And you know, picked up an internship with the old San Diego Soccers. They were indoors at that point, and they allowed me to do play-by-play into a tape deck, provided I would do what interns do, and that was, you know, hauling TVs up to the top of the arena, the big old 19-inch TVs, and back in the day, 1989, 1988, they were pretty heavy, but I would do that, and they allowed me to do some games, and I did a ton of games, and it was all about repetition, and I... You know, eventually, because we still had no outdoor league, I was doing play-by-play for the Continental Indoor Soccer League. And the team was the Anaheim Splash, and that was my first, you know, paid job to do, and it was fun.
You know what? So was I in the CISL calling
yes.
games. That's where I got my
hot
start.
Shots,
so
right?
You and I, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you and I crossed paths even deeper than we know.
Yeah.
Back then. So you get this passionate call of the game, but there's also a part of your career where you worked with Jim Rome and you were in the production side of it as well. I mean, so you have a really deep background when it comes to experiences.
I was in the right place at the right time. The station that hired me at the time, 690 out of San Diego, it was an all-news talk station. I was the morning news producer and always slanted towards sports. They were the flagship of the San Diego Chargers, and so I had a little in. And October of 1990, we flipped the station to all sports radio, and it was arguably the second one in the country to do that. WFAN in New York was the first, of course. And then, you might be a fan of WIP out of Philadelphia. They may say they were the first, the second or so, but we were right there. And I was, in the right place at the right time, 20 years old, being able to be part of a sports station and being, at the beginning of this format, which, of course, we all made a bunch of mistakes, but we figured it out along the way. And they teamed me with Jim as his producer, his board op, for the sake of using a word that maybe listeners might not know, but I was producing the show, running the commercials and everything else, and had an opportunity to be on the air doing sports updates at that point. And Jim and I were on the air for 5 hours a night. 7 to midnight originally was the show. And Jim became successful. I was part of that success, luckily. And we were together for 5 years, and we took it to a national show, and we created something called the Noble Sports Radio Network, and we had a gentleman by the name of Brian Purdy, who has worked in Houston. I don't know if he still lives there or not, but he was peddling our show nationally, and that's how we built the Jim Rome Network.
Incredible. Talking to Joe Dottino, yeah. Longtime play-by-play man for the LA Galaxy. He has seen it all. Just a great ambassador for the game, the league, the Galaxy in general. For you as a broadcaster, what's most important when you go into a game? What is your job on game day? I mean, we know the nuts and bolts of it, but how do you want to come across on a broadcast?
I think I try to always keep in the back of my mind of not getting my opinions in the way of what's going on. Certainly, I think I'm somewhat opinionated on the call, and I'll say if it's a bad play or a bad defensive move or a bad pass or whatever it is, but I always try to balance if that same player does something good to recognize that as well. But I try to, I tell the young guys, let it breathe. It's a bottle of wine. Pop the cork, let it breathe a little bit, especially on television. Radio-wise, of course, you have to be more descriptive. But that's what I try to do. I don't try to be anything other than who I am, because I cannot be somebody else, and that would be a bad move. And so I try to be as natural as possible, and I try to let the emotions part of a goal and so forth to be as natural as it can be.
Now, you've worked with a lot of great analysts and great guys, Rick Davis, Kobe Jones, a couple that I've worked with as well, not as often as you, but Rick and I used to do some Serie A, and then Kobe and I have done some World Cup. So, give me a good Rick story and Kobe, because it is a team at the end of the day. You and I know that very distinctively. It's how two people work together. It's how they present themselves as an enhancement to the game. So talk about Rick and Kobe.
So, it's interesting because this Rick obviously played in the old NESL, and a lot of his career was in the MISL indoors when the league went away, unfortunately. But in his case, he was also on television. So he had a couple of World Cups under his belt, if I remember, at least one World Cup under his belt for NBC. So he had broadcast experience when I came on board with him. And he initially was my co-host with what we started, which was Galaxy Talk. That was the original English spoken word for the LA Galaxy on my station, 1997, 1998, until we finally integrated English broadcast in 1999, TV and radio on a full-time basis. And so So for Rick, he was kind of my surrogate, even though I had this burning desire to be a play-by-play man outdoor when the league returned and I had indoor experience. He was kind of the guy that said, hey, you know, this guy can do it. Give him a chance. And for him, I owe a tremendous amount of allegiance to him, not for that, and the fact that he's an incredible person. And in terms of Rick, I think on a broadcast, Rick is the epitome of seeing both sides of the story. He always was that way. So if it was a great play for the opponent, he would make sure he talked about that and so forth. He always stayed down the middle, and I learned that from Rick. Kobe's a different story for me because Kobe, I announced pretty much every game he played for the LA Galaxy. And and for him, you see him differently as a player, and then he's next to you in the broadcast booth. And he, to me, comes across as a guy that when you first retire as a player, it takes a little time to be able to really say what's going on because your colleagues are still out there, right?
Yeah.
But as that evolves along the way, you suddenly call a spade, and Kobe's not afraid to do it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I like that about Kobe also. I mean, you could make an argument, and no better person to ask than you. Is he the most definitive player in LA Galaxy history? I mean, even because of where he was in those early years and how important he was as the face of that franchise?
Yeah, I think... If we're going to do MLS 1.0, 2.0, and so forth, and for the Galaxy down that road too, I think Kobe certainly was MLS face of the league 1.0, face of the LA Galaxy 1.0, and then it kind of transitioned on eventually as Kobe got a little older, and of course Landon Donovan came on board and into David Beckham, and things started to go skyward. But certainly, without a doubt, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when I think of the LA Galaxy and even the U.S. national team 94 and going forward, Kobe's right there. I think still today, if you ask somebody that may not be a soccer fan, do you know anything about American soccer? Do you own any players? I think Kobe Jones's name still comes to the forefront, maybe not number one, but certainly one, two, three, somebody will mention Kobe Jones's name.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you've seen so many greats: Kevin Hartman, Donovan, Beckham, Keane, Hermosillo, Cienfuegos. All right, so LAFC's come to town now. How good has it been for the rivalry? I mean, this has got to be another great phase in your career to be a part of El Tráfico.
See, I think it's great. I know that the and fans on both sides, they're going to fight it out. Hopefully not literally fight it out, but you know, go after each other social media-wise and so forth. And in that regard, I believe it's great. And I think, listen, when you go to a Galaxy game on a Saturday night and the other guys are playing at home, so I'll take it from there, the other guys are playing at home, you're talking about plus 40,000 fans watching professional soccer in Los Angeles. And that's a great number. I mean, that says a lot about where the sport is and the desire to go to a Galaxy game or the young guys game. And you know what? They're a good team. They had a great year last year. I understand what fans are talking about and media is talking about in terms of, hey, you want to be him, you want to be them, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I like the five rings that the Galaxy has.
Yeah. On the other hand, hasn't it been a great boost that LAFC has come in so big, and in some ways you can argue fairly that they have lifted the bar in some areas.
Absolutely. And I think what it does is it makes the Galaxy be better. The competition, you know, as far as they feed off each other to be better. I think LAFC has a thought process how to go about doing things. I think the LA Galaxy have had this thought process for quite some time, even going all the way back to when Alexi Lalas became the general manager of the club, and he was throwing the words around about, you know, MLS is super club and so forth.
Super club,
now,
yeah.
While the Galaxy don't necessarily say that anymore, I think they kind of carry that responsibility. in mind when they're putting their club together. And that's why I've been fortunate enough to say David Beckham's name on a regular basis, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and Landon Donovan, and even Chicharito, although we've only had two matches there, and Jonathan Dos Santos and Gio Dos Santos over the years, and those guys. So we've been very fortunate, those of us that cover the Galaxy and broadcast their games, and even the fans, to have those names around. But you can't win every year, as you know, Glenn. I mean, you've had great teams in Houston that have their own share of championships, and the names are a little bit different than what I've been used to having to broadcast. So it's about winning, and everybody goes about it a different way.
Joe, you're one of the best. You're also not only a very, very good commentator and an exceptional one that's had an exceptional career, but you're also a very, very good guy. And that's the other thing I like about you, Joe Tatino. So thank you very much for coming on tonight. Congratulations on that article and that honoring, because you're a guy that's contributed heavily to the sport in this country, and I thank you for that.
Well, hey, congratulations to you as well. I mean, your resume is very long, my friend, and you got World Cup broadcasts under your belt. Listen, if you're going to say congratulations to me, I need to tip my cap to you, and thank you very much for having me.
Joe, thanks for coming on the show tonight. We'll do it again real soon, okay?
I hope so. Thank you.
All right, that's Joe Tatino, LA Galaxy. Imagine what he's seen. Kobe Jones, Kevin Hartman, Donovan, Beckham, Keane, Hermosillo, Luis Hernandez. Remember all these guys? He's come through LA. Unbelievable. And now he's seen the LAFC, coming in, creating the turf war in Los Angeles. Man, we've been catching up with a lot of the great commentators. Joe Tatino, Dave Johnson. We've had a number of different people on the show. Dwight Burgess, JP Della Camera. We're working our way through them, and that was one thing I wanted to do. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about COVID-19, how it's affecting the college game. We're going to visit with Texas A&M Aggie head coach, the great top 20-ranked program. He built it. G. Guerreri coming up next.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Man, this has been a really, really fun show tonight. A very diverse show. Talking some vinyl. Joe Tatino, longtime play-by-play guy in Major League Soccer since 96 with the Galaxy. Incredible stories from Pablo Mastroianni. And now we're going to bring on a great longtime friend of mine, has done an amazing job building the program, the women's soccer program at Texas A&M. And we're going to talk some college soccer right now and kind of what's the climate here. Obviously, a lot of it's hypothetical. But G. Guerreri joins us now, Texas A&M's women's coach, one of the top college programs in the country. And he is one of the legendary coaches when it comes to games won and winning percentage. He joins us now. G, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. It's a happy Cinco de Mayo to you.
Yeah, I forgot it was Cinco de Mayo. But yeah, I've been reminded of that. Apparently there's a lot of people at a couple of the Mexican sort of restaurants imbibing in some good margaritas. All right, so let's get to A&M and let's get to kind of what's going on here, because I think I want to know what kind of, I'm just thinking, you know, you're running this program. It's a big program to run, big reputation, players coming in and out, players trying to graduate, players that are going to come into the program, the season, talking to the NCAA, athletic directors, other coaches. What's going on right now around the playing of the upcoming season?
Well, right now we're planning to go ahead and make it business as usual. All of our classes, like all the schools in the state, are online for the whole summer. That's for May, June, and July. We're hoping to be able to get our student athletes back on campus, hopefully by July. And then the question kind of comes down to, what happens with the fall? Our chancellor has said that, he's hoping to have all of our students back in classes in some form or fashion, face-to-face classes this fall in Aggieland. And it'll be just a matter of now how do we manage that, and then how do we manage the start of a season? Because, when all of the spring sports got canceled, it also stopped us in our tracks. We had already played a few games in our exhibition season in the spring. Then we left for spring break, and we never came back. And so so for us, we got about 6 of our 8 weeks in our off season. For a lot of the teams up north, they didn't get any, and so they haven't had a meaningful training session since October. So one of the buzz phrases that you'll hear, whether it's they're talking about women's football like we are or men's football, the odd shaped ball, is acclimation period. And how long will it take for student athletes to acclimate once they get onto campus before you can really start to, get the balls out and play? And, getting people back on campus is going to, in many ways, from what I understand, will be determined by testing and, how often do you test and what happens if someone is, test positive? What do you have to quarantine them for 2 weeks? Where are the medical folks saying that the steps are going to be for all that? Because obviously we don't want anyone to come down with this. I know you've had some friends who have endured this, mm-hmm. but from a strictly football sense, if three players down the spine of your team come down with it and they're out for 2 weeks, well, that's several games as well. So we're going to have to have flexibility in the way that we go about testing for it, responding to it, treating people. How will it affect crowds? What will they do in those things? These are all questions that still have to be answered. I know that President Trump has met with the NCAA as well as MLS and MLB and all those, and they're talking about the return to play protocols. So I remain optimistic that we're going to be able to go on and get this thing done. But, a lot of these decisions, all of these decisions are above my pay grade.
G. Guerrieri talking about the current situation. Texas A&M women's coach. What's the response back with your players? I know you're doing a lot of social media stuff with them. Obviously there's got to be varying emotions coming from your squad.
Well, you put yourself back into your own shoes when you were 19 to 21 years old, and just change is always hard for any of us, but not kind of having an idea of what's going on, it's making everybody a little antsy. A few of them are still here in College Station, but we're literally, the team has gone home, and we're literally from coast to coast, and from Mexico to Canada, as far as our players. So yeah. There's a lot of different things that they're dealing with. The good thing is that for especially the ones who are here back in Texas and some of the ones in Georgia and some of the other states are starting to open up, at least now they're able to get out and, kind of stretch their legs again and not have to, just be completely pinned in. Pinning in a highly athletic 20-year-old is it's going to take some pretty strong rubber bands to keep them in. They're going to have to get out and do a little bit. And that's what a lot of our players have, that's been the complaint of them. Like they're wanting to know, the first question is always, when can we come back? When can we come back? But, they want to be around each other. We're coming off of another great year and they want to get on with it. They're excited about what this year can be for the A&M program.
G. Guerrieri joining us, 750 winning percentage as a coach, which puts him up there amongst the greats in the women's college game. You must have been excited, G, when Breck Shea was acquired by the Houston Dash. Breck Shea. Shea Groom. Well, Breck Shea is from College Station, too, so I'm not that
he
bad
is.
Off, but I mean
and
Shea
Breck,
Groom, who's,
and Breck's got,
who's been
Breck's
on this
got the
show.
Hair that, yeah, he's got the yeah. hair that he could almost try to get in with the Dash sometimes. But
I met the talented Shea Groom, who was on this show, and she's such a fun player to watch. I'm glad she's on the Dash now.
Well, so am I. And I know James, you know, Clarkson was really, really excited about the opportunity to bring her in, and thinks that she's going to fit into the way that he wants to play. And you know, I'm a Dash fan. I want them to do well. I have a lot of respect for what James does and his staff. So having Shea back into Texas is pretty exciting. I think finally the fact that they've got an Aggie on the team now will probably show itself a little bit, not just in results, but in the ticket count as far as the people that Shea brings in, because she's an exciting player to watch.
Yeah, I absolutely love the fact that she's been able to define a career in the NWSL, and she came on and kind of documented how once she got to the NWSL, things had to change for her a little bit. But to see a player of her stature that's really technically based perform well in the league, that's got to be refreshing to you, I would assume.
Of course. I mean, she is a reflection of the kind of kids that come through this program. You know, we have several girls. I call them girls. One of my quote girls just had a 46th birthday the other day, which doesn't seem right to me because I've been here for a while, but because they're eternally 19 in my head. But Shea is someone who's really matured in the league. You know, she played a long time for Vlatko, both in Kansas City and in Seattle. You know, she got a call up with Jill Ellis with the full national team in the lead up to the last World Cup. And, you know, she had to deal with a couple of injuries last year, but I know that she's excited to be back in Texas and really excited to be to have a Dash jersey on this year. It's just a matter of, you know, they were about to report and then they got the stop just like the Dynamo did. So hopefully we'll take the shackles off and we'll all be able to come back safely.
Yeah, so Phil and Lori Stevenson, part of your staff, UG, you know, what's the typical day like these days? How much interaction do you have with them? How much with the team? What's a typical day for you like now?
Well, for the team, they're just finishing up final exams. So we've been hands-off, hands-off being we haven't been on a Zoom meeting with them in the last week. We'll get back on with them tomorrow. We have our first meeting with them because finals will finish up tomorrow. Phil and Lori are here in town, and you know we're chatting, you know, often and every day. And then I'm on an NCAA committee that has to do with this return to play protocol. We've got a call coming up this Thursday, the men's and the women's, that's trying to get it to where college soccer is all on the same page and trying to do the same things and doing the right things for not just the fans, but make sure that our athletes are going to be safe and that we're going to have a meaningful NCAA season ahead.
Yeah. G. Guerrieri joining us, Texas A&M women's coach, and has done such a wonderful job with that program. Just looking ahead, I mean, you would want to start preseason as normal, so your dates are normal. Are you looking like I am as much to what's going on in Europe? The Bundesliga tomorrow has a huge meeting to see if they can actually begin to play on May 15th. They're back practicing, and they actually have guys that are testing positive for the coronavirus, yet there still seems this desire to go ahead and start their league.
Yeah, I know in Germany and I know in England that, I mean, as much as anything, they're kind of looking at their professional leagues as mental health for the rest of the country, just to so that, you know, they're watching football again and that they're kind of getting themselves back into some sort of normalcy. I think it probably makes the players feel a little bit like gladiators sometimes in the way that goes. And clearly that's not the way that we want, you know, our players to feel here in the States. But, you know, as a player, I know I would have been like, please just let's go. Let's find a way to get this thing going and, you know, make it safe as you can for me. But, you know, I'm on this earth right now to play football and let's get it going.
How was your recruiting year?
It's been great. It's been great. We've got some really, really good kids out, not just a few from right here in Houston. But, you know, we've got, you know, four coming in from Houston. We've got a Canadian national teamer coming in. We've got two really, really good good players out of two out of California and one transfer out of California as well. And you know, we're building on, you know, what we've done in the past. You know, we remain undefeated against all the other schools in Texas for the last 12 years. So you know, trying to build on that and see if we can win another SEC championship. And you know, we've now been to 25 NCAA tournaments in a row, which is pretty amazing for what they've been able, what these girls have been able to do year after year, and to step into that pressure every year to be able to perform. So we're, you know, the sky's the limit is the way we look at it. And we just know that this year is going to be, clearly is going to be different than anything else that we've ever experienced. But we're optimistic and hopeful that we are going to experience it, and we're going to, and that it'll be a great experience for our fans, but also for my players.
G, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We appreciate it. Please take care of yourself. Thank you, by the way, for coming down to Houston always and contributing to the Kick Cancer events that the Cy-Fair Dynamos have, and being a part of the Houston soccer community over all these years as well. So thank you very much for that. Have a great night. We'll talk soon.
You bet. And, you know, with our camps being kind of canceled for the summer, I get a chance to come down and be a fan more than ever before. So I'm looking forward to getting down to BBVA and hopefully running into you. So all the best to you and to everyone else there in Houston.
Thank you, G. That does it tonight. Big thank you to Nick Sherrara back in studio. Victor Ariza, always, for his contributions to the show. And everybody out there, please stay safe. And again, a reminder, the real heroes are out front. You know who they are. It's the likes of nurses, doctors, truck drivers, cashiers, caretakers, EMTs. Those are our superheroes. Let's make sure we keep them lifted up. Podcastarena.com, iTunes for the podcast of this show. Tomorrow night, we're on in Austin, 7 Central on Horn FM. Good night, everyone.